Hello, geeks, freaks, and tomb dwellers, and welcome back to another episode of Tombs of Horror. As always, I'm your host, Dustin. With this being the last episode before the season finale, I just wanted to bring to everybody's attention a little West Side-South Side rivalry I've got going on with another fellow musician. I've talked about him in previous episodes. His band is Entropy in Motion, and the other one, I'm not even going to try to pronounce and butcher its name again. It's CZNA. But anyway, I've got a kind of a friendly little rivalry going on with him. In his episode of the Decibels Deep podcast, which he hosts, he had reviewed my EP Direwolf. And he had mentioned that out of the two of us, I'm the heavier. But then he had to go and release a single where he had to go and fucking out heavy me. Because I haven't really gone all that heavy since my The Summoning... what the fuck? The Summoning album. And so he had to go and out heavy me. And ever since, he's been talking shit about it. About how he's heavier than me. And so that finally lit the fire underneath my ass to go heavy again, which I'm planning, or which I've already started to do while recording my next EP, which will be We Are Legion, which will be coming out maybe sometime at the end of next month. But anyway, we've got kind of a little rivalry going, West Side, East Side. South Side, because he lives out in Colorado and I live here down in the South. So yeah, take this as my war statement, and I'm coming for you, fucker. Anyway, to get into the episode proper, I decided I would talk about the Blind Dead series, which is four movies in total. None of these movies are really essential horror watching if you're new to this franchise. They're really not, none of them are really all that great. The first one's decent enough, but after that they kind of really start to suck ass. But if I only did one movie out of the four for this episode, it would be a very short episode indeed. So let's get into it with 1972's Tombs of the Blind Dead.
Blind terror strikes fear into the hearts of innocent people. The morgue receives the victims of the blind dead. There's no escape from the blind dead. They are the Templars, devil worshippers, a death cult that has risen from their thousand-year-old tombs to begin a horrible reign of terror. Is trapped by the evil forces. No one is safe from their curse.
They're coming!
Sound in the ancient cemetery brings the evil creatures from their tombs. perform their sadistic rites. A virgin is sacrificed in a blood ritual. A fiery death for those who can't escape the blind dead. Coming soon from your cemetery.
The movie opens in the 14th century, where legend has it that in the abandoned medieval town of Burzano, at the border between Spain and Portugal, the Knights Templar, which is a fictionalized version of the real-life order that was dissolved in the 14th century following charges of witchcraft and heresy, leave their tombs at night and come back from the dead as revenants. The reanimated corpses are blind because their eyes were pecked out by birds while their hanged bodies rotted on the gallows. We then fast forward to present times, or 1970s present times, where while on vacation nearby with her friend Roger Whelan, Virginia White reconnects with her dear college friend Betty Turner, who relocated in the area and now runs a mannequin factory. Roger immediately takes a liking to Betty and invites her along for a train journey, provoking Virginia's jealousy, as the two women had a romantic relationship years prior. Angry at both, Virginia jumps off the train, and while wandering through the country, she comes upon the ruins of Burzano, where she decides to camp overnight. The knights then rise from their tombs and attack her, ultimately biting and ripping her flesh. Her corpse is then found in a field the following morning by the returning train conductor. The next morning, Betty and Roger retrace Virginia's steps, trying to find out what happened to her, and they hear about the legend from some locals and meet two police investigators who inform them about Virginia's horrible fate. Later at the morgue, next to Betty's laboratory, Virginia's corpse comes back to life and kills a custodian, then flees to the lab and is only stopped by Betty's assistant, who manages to set Virginia on fire inside the mannequin factory. In the meantime, Betty and Roger are investigating the legend with the help of Professor Pedro Candle, who indirectly sends him to find his son Pedro, who lives near Burzano as a small-time smuggler and is suspected by the police to be the one who killed Virginia as a way to install fear in the locals. Once they've located Pedro and convince him to help them prove that the knights are real, Betty and Roger return with Pedro and his lover Nina to Burzano to confront the knights once and for all. Upon their arrival, they are confronted by the knights, who kill Roger, Pedro, and Nina. The knights then find Betty through her harpy, and she flees from Burzano with the knights in pursuit. She boards a passing train and hides in the cargo area with the coal, and the knights take charge of the train, killing the conductor and cannibalizing passengers on board. The train then arrives at a station shortly thereafter, and Betty, speechless, is helped by a station attendant. And as several passengers go to board the train, they scream in horror at the sight inside. Now, like I said at the beginning of this episode, none of these movies are essential watching if you've never seen them before. But this first chapter is probably the best out of the entire franchise. Probably the coolest part about this entire movie is seeing the skeletal Templar zombies riding around their horses in slow motion. It actually really kind of adds to the sense of menace that they bring. And there is a little bit of goriness. And there's one scene, the train scene, where the Templars basically slaughter everybody on board near the end. There's one part of that scene where I can't remember correctly, it's one or two pretty young actors. They can't be older than 7 or 8. But they really weren't made aware of what was going to happen in this scene. And so their reaction and the look of terror on their face is very real. Obviously, they weren't hurt in real life. But still, this scene was enough to scare the shit out of them. As it probably would anyone when you're 7 or 8 years old. My biggest problem with this movie, though, is the pacing. It's pretty fucking slow. It moves slower than the Templars themselves. So it's kind of a chore to sit through. But it's okay for what it is. IMDb gave this a 6.2 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes a surprising 75%. Letterboxd a 3 out of 5. And I give it a 3.5 out of 5. And that leads us into 1973's Return of the Blind Dead.
Terror once again treks its legendary course, making your flesh creep with pleasure. Night, when the unliving rise again from their graves, you will tremble with the return of the evil dead. Their hellborn revenge, for which there is no assurance of protection, nor will you escape the fear, the anxiety, which the return of the evil dead provokes. A new high in excitement. Return of the Evil Dead. The Return of the Evil Dead with Tony Kendall and Fernando Sancho. The terrifying thriller of the year. Do not attend this film alone. We suggest you bring at least one large partner to hold you tight. The lifeless horsemen will make this theater into a living horror. Return of the Evil Dead. The Return of the Evil Dead. Be sure you're in fit condition. And don't scream.
Also known as The Return of the Evil Dead, the film opens with a flashback to 13th century Buzano, Portugal, where a peasant mob has captured the Knights Templar and is preparing to burn them for witchcraft and murder. One of the captured knights swears revenge on the village, and the villagers burn the knight's eyes out with torches before burning them to death, which really doesn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense, because in the first film, it was mentioned that the Templars' eyes were plucked out by birds. But anyway, the film fast forwards ahead to the present, where the village prepares for a festival celebrating the 500th anniversary of the defeat of the Templars. The village idiot, Myrtle, watches the preparations until being attacked and stoned by a pack of children. The children are then run off by Mancha and Juan, who are romantically involved locals. Back in the town square, firework technician and former military captain Jack Marlowe meets Mayor Duncan, his assistant DaCosta, and his fiancée/secretary Vivian. It is revealed that Jack and Vivian have a personal history, establishing a tension between the four characters. Jack and Vivian then take a walk, where she reveals that she purposely hired Jack to rekindle their romance. Their walk takes them to the Abbey graveyard, where the Templars are buried, and their romantic interlude is interrupted by Peeping Myrtle, who proceeds to warn him of the Templars' impending return. After Jack and Vivian leave, Myrtle murders a young townswoman that he has kidnapped as a blood sacrifice to the knights. While the festival is in full swing, the Templars rise, awakened by Myrtle's sacrifice, and at the festival, Jack convinces Vivian to leave with him. Their interactions cause Duncan to get pissed off, and he and DaCosta keep a close eye on the pair. Back at the graveyard, the Templars ride down Myrtle, but do leave him alive, and head toward town. On their way, they come across Mancha's house, where she is in the midst of a sexual rendezvous with Juan. Juan is killed, but Mancha escapes on an undead Templar horse, and she stops for help at a train station, where she persuades the station manager of the danger by revealing her zombie horse. She then runs off as he tries to call the mayor. While the phone rings in his office, the mayor dispatches DaCosta and his henchmen to assault Jack. The beating is then interrupted when the call from the station manager gets through. The mayor is skeptical of everything, of course, and believes the manager to be drunk. He then sends the Casa to the station to take over, and the Templars arrive at the station and kill the manager. Meanwhile, Jack and Vivian leave in Jack's car. They then encounter the traumatized Mancha in the middle of the road and bring her back to town. The Casa and another of Duncan's goons, Berio, encounter the knights as they approach a train section or train station, and they hurry back to the village and warn the mayor of the oncoming horde. The mayor then calls the governor to request help, but his pleas, of course, fall on deaf ears as the governor assumes Duncan to be drunk and reprimands him. The governor is the third person to ignore the warnings of the coming Templars, assuming the messenger to be drunk. And of course, you know this is going to cause problems. The knights then descend on the village, and the festival turns into a massacre. Jack organizes the Casa and some of the villagers into a defense force as Duncan scrambles to gather his valuables and then looks on from the balcony. Eventually, Jack and DaCosta clear an escape for most of the villagers, and Jack, Vivian, DaCosta, Mancha, and Duncan are all left behind. They try to get away in Jack's car, but are overwhelmed by zombies, but manage to escape into the into a church where Berio and his wife Amelia are holed up with their daughter. Once inside the church, the group also finds Murdo hiding out. The survivors then begin fortifying the church against the undead siege, but before long, unity begins to erode, and after failing once again to convince the governor of their plight, Duncan persuades Berio to make a break for the car, which he is killed in the attempt. Meanwhile, Murdo persuades Mancha to come with them into the tunnels beneath the church to escape, and after Berio's failed attempt, Duncan tries to escape using Berio and Amelia's young daughter as bait. But he is killed and the child is left in grave peril among the Templars. Jack and Amelia manage to save her, however, with Amelia sacrificing her own life in the process. Meanwhile, down in the tunnels, Murdo is decapitated by the knights as he climbs out to the surface, and Mancha is subsequently pulled by her head through the opening and killed. Back in the church, DaCosta catches Vivian alone, and resigned to a grim fate, he attempts to rape her before the Templars kill him. Jack rescues Vivian, and DaCosta is impaled on a spear in the ensuing scuffle. As the night wears on, Jack and Vivian decide to chance escaping. They convince Amelia's daughter that the zombies and her mother's death were both part of a nightmare, and then blindfold her as they attempt to silently creep through the square full of blind dead. As they slip past the knights, the little girl peeks out of her blindfold and screams as she sees the zombies surrounding them. However, the Templars make no move and then crumple to the ground in the coming morning light. And Jack, Vivian, and the child walk away from the village as the end credits roll. This is probably the second best film in the franchise, and as a sequel, it's pretty solid, which is a surprise. Because as most people know, most horror sequels tend to suck. I mean, it isn't a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination, but the makers of this first sequel did a pretty good job of giving the fans exactly what they wanted. The biggest improvement in this one is that the knights themselves are given much more screen time in this than they were the first one, which makes sense because that's who this whole franchise is about. They also make sure that there's plenty of victims to be slaughtered in this, and slaughtered they get. But once again, the good is kind of marred by a rather slow pacing. It's not by any means as slow as the first one was, but it's still pretty hard to sit through when it comes with the pacing. But it's still worth a watch. IMDb gave this a 5.9 out of 10, Rotten Tomatoes a 25%, Letterboxd a 4.5 out of 5, and I give it a 3 out of 5. And that leads us into the second sequel, 1974's The Ghost Galleon.
We're here! Hey!
Hey! Help us out!
Help! Come on!
I've covered an area 50 square miles and found nothing. Over.
course by boat.
How could they disappear into thin air? Maybe it's true the phantom ship does exist.
Ghost Galleon.
Yes, this book is the daily navigational guide the captain had on board the ship more than 2 centuries ago. Sinister ship, condemned to sail eternally.
You're not going anywhere. You'll stay here and do as you're told.
Let me go. You mustn't do that.
Keep out of this, Lil. You're involved enough in this already.
What at the beginning was only a legend turned into the most horrible reality. Ghost Galleon. Maria Pershey. Jack Taylor. Barbara Ray. Carlos Lemos. Manuel de Blas. Blanca Estrada in Ghost Galleon.
You want me to do it? I told you I'm scared.
5 human beings with selfish passions find themselves aboard a ship sailing through a night without end.
Oh, would you? You said you would.
Oh, come on now, cut it out.
And I could learn to do all the important things like fixing my hair. And I could learn to be just like you.
It seemed like a nightmare. But Death Witch came to them one by one. Forced them to accept the horrible reality.
I told you they wouldn't try to do it. And yet, they tried. And not like all the rest of them, they disappeared. Just like magic.
An important film.
I don't know what you're going to do, but I'm getting out of here.
The most horrifying sacrifices in unimaginable circumstances in the middle of the ocean. Death was the end of this adventure.
They've got me.
Ghost Galleon.
It's coming directly at us. The ship's going to hit us.
The movie opens with a pair of swimsuit models out in a boat to stage a publicity stunt by appearing to be stranded. They discover a mysterious galleon chartered in mist and, like retards, board it. When contact is lost, the wealthy and unscrupulous businessman who sent them out decides to mount his own rescue mission and abducts one of the model's friends. The abducted girl makes an unsuccessful attempt to escape, and the businessman and his secretary recruit an eccentric scholar to assist them in their search for the missing models and their boat. The Phantom Galleon ends up carrying the coffins of the Knights Templar, who, as everybody knows, are eyeless mummies who hunt humans by sound. The 2 models are killed before the rescue party arrives, and when the rescue party does board the galleon, they discover that their ship has vanished. The abducted girl is captured and dragged into the depths of the ship to be dismembered and eaten, while the rest of the group is locked in an unnatural sleep. The survivors struggle to repel and combat the Spectral Knights with what little knowledge they have of them, and end up fighting for the rest of their lives, trying to make it until morning. As you can tell by my shortened synopsis of the movie, this, which I tend to do with movies I hate this movie. The knights in this one look like complete shit. Like they didn't even try with their makeup and all that kind of stuff. It's just done really badly. And this is definitely the weakest of the 4 films in the franchise. There's a whole list of problems with this movie, but my biggest problem with it is that there's not a whole hell of a lot going on throughout most of the movie, and it's filled with scenes where people just fucking talk and talk and talk about things that have nothing to do with anything, as if they were just trying to kill time until the movie ended. It's just not very good. It's once again got glacier slow pacing. And like I said, not a whole hell of a lot goes on throughout the majority of this movie. IMDb gave it a 4.6 out of 10. Letterboxd a 25%. Rotten Tomatoes a 25%. Letterboxd a 2.6 out of 5. And I give it a 1.5 out of 5. And that leads us to the fourth and final film, 1975's Night of the Seagulls.
A new terror fills the screen with horror. The Night of the Seagulls. Women going dressed in mourning, leading a young girl to sacrifice. Mystery surrounds the horsemen from the ancient past. The Night of the Seagulls.
I set you free.
They may be here. Get away, sir. Peter said they died 6 centuries ago. I'm being given up to them so others may be saved. Hurry, you must get away, sir.
I won't leave you here. Stand up against the cruelty and the fanaticism of the dead horsemen. The Night of the Seagulls. With Maria Costi, Victor Petit, Sandra Mozorowski, Julie James. The Night of the Seagulls.
What's that?
A beast of the sea. It must be a god belonging to some unknown culture.
What's going to happen to us now?
I don't know. But this idol is responsible for all the sacrifices.
Directed by Armando de Osorio. A Pro Films and Ancla Century Films co-production.
The film opens in medieval times when a young couple is attacked by the Knights Templar. The man is instantly killed, and the woman is carried away to the Templar's castle where she is sacrificed. We then fast forward to the 20th century, where Dr. Henry Stein and his wife Joan are moving into a very primitive coastal town, where they are met with distrust and hatred from the locals. It doesn't take long before the doctor and his wife find out that the town harbors an ancient evil. Every 7 years, undead Templars rise from the sea for 7 consecutive nights to demand the sacrifice of a young maiden. The doctor and his wife then try to save one of the maidens from her horrible fate, aided by the local village idiot Teddy. And knows that survive must battle for their lives, blah, 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 blah. This is probably the weakest of the four movies, and the franchise ends with a whimper instead of a bang. This has probably the slowest pacing out of all four movies, which means that it's pretty much unbearable to sit through with how slow this motherfucker goes. You keep expecting something's going to happen, but then it lets you down and it just keeps dragging on and on and on for what seems like forever, even though it's only an hour and a half movie. It also contains very little gore, which I can say that the other three movies before this had plenty of. But with this one, it's almost nowhere to be found. And it would have been a lot better. And I know I say this more often than not, that gore doesn't make a movie good. But in this case, it would have. It would have at least made the fucking slow as shit pacing at least a little more bearable. But nope, barely any gore in this one. And the whole plot just pretty much copies everything from the movies that came before it. It's not It doesn't offer anything new, and as a conclusion to a series, it's a big letdown. And if you were gonna skip any of these movies, I'd definitely recommend that it be this one. IMDb gave it a 5.8 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes at 25%. Letterboxd at 2.5 out of 5. And I give it a half a star out of 5. And that just about wraps it up for this episode. As always, you can reach me at darkysyde9034@gmail.com. Once again, I almost forgot my own fucking email. And also, I have a new album out called Terminal Chapter 1. If you haven't already, you can check that out on Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, iTunes, and every other major music streamer. So if you haven't, I'd appreciate it if you'd go and check that out. And that's it, guys. I'm Dustin, and this has been Tombs of Horror. I'll see you next time for the season finale.